is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. Soprano Renelle Krause is a firecracker artist, a coloratura soprano who can wow with the goods as the Queen of the Night in Mozart's The Magic Flute, but she possesses much, much more. Renelle Krause is an extremely talented aerial artist who works with silks to exhibit her multi-talented acrobatics in the air with a flourish that can astound while she is singing. There are few singers who can claim this added talent. It is a definite niche and thrilling to watch. But there is more. Renelle Krause is an eloquent, ardent, motivated realist. She approaches the music business with an impressive business head on her shoulders. She has given space to herself to maneuver through the complex world of auditions, rejections, and successes with balance and a judicious soul. And I found her steadfast attitude to be fresh and of much educational value to young artists. For my listening public, the changes in our world and in politics are being reflected in the arts. And whether we want to admit it or not, there is a shift in the matrix of how classical music is being regarded and developing in the eyes of the public and within the music business itself. Quite simply, arts funding is being curtailed and reduced in most instances, and private funding has shifted to other areas outside of the arts communities. So jobs are becoming harder to come by, and many artists are feeling the punch. COVID has indeed changed our world. But the performing arts are hanging on. And with artists like Renelle Krause, who are carving a living being constantly on the road, we are seeing the heavier demands on performers living out their dreams while finding work to pay the rent. So let's come back to part two of this interview with Renelle, addressing the reality of living that dream, her aerial work with the silks, and her life's focus. You know, you sit here and you speak about your career and singing and forging this amazing career, and you make it sound so easy, Renelle. You have such confidence. It's actually quite beautiful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I would say, though, for anyone listening, especially anyone who's in that middle period where you're out of school and you're not quite working, or you're not working enough, or you're not working at the level that you want to be at, and everything makes sense in hindsight. So I can look at my career, such as it is, and say, oh, well, yeah, I went to this program and I met this person, and that led to this, and that led to this, and then I had this amazing opportunity, and that went, yeah, and here we are. But when you're in the middle of it, none of it makes sense. You're looking into a vast expanse of nothing and hoping that something will work out.
That's right. And it might take 10, 20 years, as many have found out. And some careers develop late. There is no doubt about it. It's the staying power that matters, isn't it?
Well, it's the staying power for sure, but it's also being very real with yourself, because I think there comes a point in the career where it is no longer worth it. Mm-hmm. If you're a 35-year-old singer who is not getting what you want out of your life, you do not have to stay in this career. There are so many ways to have fulfilling musical and artistic experiences that do not include pursuing this career in this industry full time. And I think there's a lot of grief around giving up a dream like that. But I think there's a lot of freedom too. I've known a number of people who found their most fulfilling musical and artistic experiences after they gave up the full-time career and had the stability of another job, so that they felt they could make more artistic choices because they didn't rely on it.
Or do their own projects or do their own recordings and really own them. This is very true. When it's a conscious decision to give this up, that changes the entire energy. It's when we feel forced or when we feel shamed that we haven't lived up to it. That's where the real problem is. The conscious decision is something, too, that's born out of just education. There are many roads we can take. There are many crossover points that can actively be taken. I mean, we're looking at Julia Bullock and Kelly O'Hara. These are people who have been trained and have actually spun a whole new life for themselves in very interesting projects. It's a beautiful thing. It's just not about the standard operatic stage anymore. In fact,
I think this is very important, especially for a singer's sense of self and their sense of self-worth. Any time that I thought about giving up the career, which I thought about often and then very seriously as I got closer to 29, I looked really deep inside myself and I thought, okay, am I really ready to give it up? And I would dig down, 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 and I would find a little kernel so deep inside that said, okay, maybe not yet. But I think you have to be able to find that. You have to know that. And if you dig down and the answer is, yeah, I think I'm ready, you know, then you have to trust in yourself and believe enough in yourself to make that choice either way.
Yeah.
But as long as it's something that you have settled on and right, and that it's not a sunk cost fallacy, like, well, I've put so much time into this and this is my identity and this is what I've said that I love for so long. It's like, none of that matters. What matters is what you want to do right now and moving forward.
Yeah, that's well said. Very well said. I love it. You should be a motivational speaker, Vanelle. So in the time of your aerial work, and I'm presuming you're going to come back to that soon, do you travel with all your own materials? And how do you work the insurance for this? I mean, is this something that's part of the package that's worked out by your agent?
Well, so it depends on what you're talking about. Just for training. So for instance, I had a really long contract in Basel. And so I did elect to bring my silks with me. I brought my silks. I brought my carabiners. I brought my swivel. I brought, you know, that kind of stuff. But I did not bring a full set of rigging materials because I'm not certified as a rigger. What I can do is I can contact local circus schools or local aerial gyms and say, hey, do you have any rig points set up? Do you mind if I bring my own set of silks and do some open gym time? And usually, because the circus community is so small, I will know someone or have a friend of a friend or, you know, be able to talk to someone and send them video clips of me and say, you know, look, I'm not a beginner. I'm also not doing anything that is super high level and dangerous. I really just want to get in for training. Mm-hmm. If there are other people, you know, and I never train alone, which is just good standard practice. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter if it's the easiest thing in the world. I don't train alone unless someone is within yelling distance. Just in case. But no, so when I wanted to train, I remember in Basel, there was a tent circus set up. And so I would go and they let me kind of rig my silks up in the hard point in their rehearsal tent. And, you know, they had spare crash pads and stuff. And so I would just go in and train a bit when I had time, or I would take classes with touring circus artists that were coming through town or performing. I would ask if they had time on their days off to maybe give me a lesson or something. But often, you know, these days, I don't even travel with my silks. They're heavy. You know, they're expensive to transport. And I'm because I'm recovering from 2 straight years of injury and various procedures and surgeries and problems, I haven't found it necessary to bring my own equipment. You know, I'm hoping to get into an aerial gym after the show here opens and my schedule opens up a little bit. But I'm really going to be going way back to basics, super careful, building my strength back up. It's sort of like after a singer has a vocal crisis and you rework it from the bottom up and you're careful. And I told both sets of my agents this year, I said, look, I am coming back to aerial work. I fully believe in the artistic integrity of what I'm doing here. And this is something that I want to do because I want this art to exist. However, I don't want to put a time frame on my rehabilitation. So for the foreseeable future, I'm not taking any professional aerial contracts until I tell you differently.
I'm so sorry about the injuries. Was this sustained in training or was there a fall?
Both.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was everything.
Oh boy.
It was not great.
This is not for the faint of heart. And I know, just talking about health, that you adhere to a pretty strict protocol about your own well-being.
Well, varying in and out of ketogenic. I mean, I play around with a lot of things, but I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. So with that comes a lot of hormonal complications, makes it very difficult to keep your weight down often, comes with a whole host of symptoms that are really a pain. And I do find that I do best on a, you know, volume, like by volume, mostly plant-based diet, pretty low in carbohydrates generally, although that also varies with my cycle. I think this is something that especially as singers, any singer that has a menstrual cycle is going to tell you it has an effect, especially if you're not on any type of hormonal intervention and you're just experiencing your natural hormonal flux. It can, doesn't for everyone, but it can have a huge effect on the voice and on the body, obviously. So I do try to keep track of that. I try to, you know, eat in a way that is going to support the art that I want to make and get enough sleep and deal with jet lag and stress and, you know, all these other things that are part and parcel of traveling all the time. which is also difficult because, man, sometimes you get to a new place, you're exhausted, you've been lugging 150 pounds of luggage up and down stairs and on trains and all over the place, and you're like,
That's right.
I just want to eat takeout, and then I'll eat takeout.
Exactly, it does come down to that. So you're in London right now, English National Opera. You're doing Queen of the Night. Which production are you doing? Tell us something about it. What you're embroiled in at the moment.
Yes, so this is the Simon McBurney production. It's an incredible, incredible production. It is my favorite production of flute, and I highly encourage basically anyone to come and see it. I mean, flute as an opera has some issues. It has some pacing issues. It has, I mean, you've always got to deal with the racism and the misogyny, which can be an open conversation when you come to misogyny, and it can be an opportunity to, look at perhaps what the racism might originally have been intended to portray, which is an othering from society. So there are ways to get around that and make it more applicable to life today in a way that's not, offensive. And this production in particular, we have a live Foley artist who is making sound effects on the side of the stage. She's in a lit booth where you can watch her work, and she's also part of the production as one of the actors. There's a whole acting troupe that is involved in the production that acts both as a singular character sometimes, or sometimes they're Papageno's flock of birds. Sometimes they are giving us information about time and space in the way that they're moving and flowing. They're hugely important. It's incredible. And we also have a live animation and chalk drawing guy that's off to the other side of the stage, and his drawings are being projected in real time along the back of the stage on a scrim. So there's a ton going on, but it's not, I find that it's not frenetic. I find especially when you're in the theater experiencing it as a whole, the entire thing is so tightly woven that it really keeps you so engaged. And particularly for the Queen of the Night, oftentimes Queen can be a real archetype kind of a character. And there's value in that. I think there's really something to be said for a strong presence and image. And especially as you're looking at this duality between the Queen of the Night and the Sun Temple. You can do a lot with that. However, this production, she has a real arc that I find really juicy to dig into. You watch not only her metaphysical and political power decline through the opera, but also her physical body continues to decline every time she appears on stage. And given the fact that I'm only on stage three times, that it really gives a lot of power to that arc.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Wow, it sounds very English National Opera as well. You know, it's their kind of production. That's fascinating. Well, where to after this, Rinelle? Are you moseying back to the United States at some point?
Well, not moseying so much as sprinting. I go straight from here. Let me see. Our final performance is March 30th, I believe. And then I fly directly to Nashville for another flute, a different English language version. My brain is soup. I've
I
been singing
know.
it. I've been singing it in Copenhagen earlier this year, sort of sprinkled through the season, and those performances are in Danish. And then I'm here learning it all in English, and then I do a different English, and then it was in German in Amsterdam. So like it's all back and forth all the time. So I'm going to Nashville, and then I'm home for 2 weeks, which is not long enough, but I will unpack and get over jet lag and repack and leave. And then I go to Valencia, where I'm covering the rehearsals of this McBurney flute in Valencia, and popping both to Berlin for at the Staatsoper for a couple of shows, and then I have one last one in Copenhagen. And then I'll finish out the season, finishing those rehearsals in Valencia, and then I should hopefully maybe be home for a good chunk of time, which I'm excited
Yay.
about.
Yeah, you need that. You really need that. Wow. And then you're performing in Atlanta soon.
I am, yeah, I'm so excited. I'll be singing a Queen of the Night with Atlanta Opera next fall.
That's great. That's wonderful. They're such a great house. Well, look, your life has been so fascinating. And I have to say, my memory of you that I saw on YouTube as Musetta scaling up the silks was so beautiful. But I just got to ask, you know, if because we've been kind of dancing around, you know, other potential careers, and you've wound so many elements into your own career, and such a really interesting perspective in how you've looked at things. If I asked you, you know, what would an ideal job be if you couldn't sing any longer? What would you gravitate towards?
I thought about that. I mean, as you do, I feel like every singer thinks, okay, well, if the voice goes, then what would I want to do with my life? I thought of a number of different things. Honestly, I think I'd really enjoy teaching aerial arts to beginners in a way that I don't think I would really enjoy teaching singing to beginners. I think if I were going to teach, I would be more suited to coaching. I think I'd be much more suited to sort of high level coaching on and off, rather than building voices from the ground up. But I think I'd really enjoy teaching beginner aerialists because I've had so many issues with my own body, and I have had to learn so much about cueing specifically, right? And this works with singing too, because everyone's brain and body are going to be available for different cueing techniques. And so because I've had to find 50 different ways of interpreting information to feed it to my body in a way that's going to work, both for my voice and for circus arts, I think I could be really helpful, especially with younger hypermobile students. But also, a lot of the hypermobile cues work for hypomobile people, or just, no normal run-of-the-mill people who are looking to get a deeper understanding of their quality of movement and how they can use that quality of movement and translate it into artistic meaning.
Beautiful. Wonderful. I think that sounds fascinating. I can send you several people when it comes to that. I can tell you that right now. So, what is on the plate for you repertoire-wise now? You know, let's look past the Queen.
Sure. I'm very happy to announce well, I don't know if I can say this yet. The contract is signed, but I don't think it's been announced yet. So, hypothetically, I am really excited to dig my teeth into a Lucia.
Oh, fantastic.
Very excited. I've been cross training with it for a while, especially because if you spend a lot of time singing Queen, especially on a performance circuit, right? It's not just practicing, it's I'm giving it everything I've got every performance. I think it's easy to neglect other aspects of technique. I remember the first time that I brought Lucia to one of my favorite coaches in New York and we started singing, and I was like, oh, legato, right? That. This is different. Italian legato is a different thing. And so it was really great. It was humbling, but in the best way to dig back into the meat of that kind of singing, especially at my age, where I am getting a lot more richness through the middle and the bottom of the voice and relearning how to integrate everything, keep it smooth, give it the fullness that I want out of the sort of vocal sound and experience. So I'm super excited for Lucia and other roles that I would like to sing. If anyone is listening and wants to give me a chance, I would really love to sing a Constanza or a Lulu. Oh, I would love to sing a Lulu.
Okay.
Serbinetta, of course, Olympia.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of potential out there. And a lot of potential within that, in the aerial work, if you do come back to that. That sounds fabulous.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, something like Fiaccarmeli's aria, right? It's such a showpiece. It's such it's the one thing she sings in the opera, and it is like a, hey, look at me, which I feel lends itself really well to an aerial act. And this is the thing too, you know, I've always felt, specifically with fusion art, that you run the risk of people thinking that it's a gimmick.
Yeah.
You run the risk of people thinking that it's cheap, of people thinking that, you know, you're just doing it for attention. And people can think whatever they want. But my own personal philosophy about it has been, look, I'm always going to be a better singer than I'm an aerialist. So anything that I put in the air has to focus on the primacy of the voice. But that doesn't mean that I want to slack on my aerial work. I want to be up there doing real choreography that other aerialists are going to look at and say, she's really doing the thing. Like, those lines are pretty clean. That technique looks pretty good, you know, while I'm doing this other thing. And I want to do it with pieces that have a reason to be in the air. Queen of the Night, to me, in the air, makes a lot of sense. Fire aria, I think, makes a lot of sense in the air. I think if you can find an artistic justification for it, instead of, oh, let me get up in the air and do a split because I can and just sit there and sing, which also can be interesting. But personally, I want to make sure that I'm doing things that I feel have a real justification.
Yeah, oh, that makes total artistic sense. Very exciting. Well, you're on the right trajectory, I'd say, with that repertoire. And I can't wait for that Lucia. This sounds really exciting.
Thank you.
Rinelle, this has been really, really very interesting from a whole other dynamic. It's fascinating to me that you've combined several worlds together, but it's more fascinating to me that you have such focus in what you're doing and the health of what you're doing on so many levels. And for so many young people who are listening to this, I hope they'll really take away some of the greatest facts that Rinelle is saying. And the most important is, when you come out of school, there is that fallow period. Do not lose the faith. It's like they say in Ted Lasso, believe. You've got to keep believing, you know?
Exactly. Well, I think the last thing that I'd like to say, especially to young singers that are listening, I think it's easy to look at a career like mine and, you know, look, I mean, the differentiation of being on the Silks has helped me. Even though I haven't had a ton of professional opportunities, I haven't been constantly gigging as a singing aerialist, it has swayed the minds of directors, and it has made certain companies interested in me because it sends a message. Right. It sends a message that I'm willing to move on stage. I'm willing to take risks. I'm, you know, and I know my body well enough that they can be safe in asking me to do things. And if it's not safe, I'll say no. But don't think that you have to find some other art form to combine with your singing to make it stand out. I would say, for me, aerial arts hit something very deep in my soul, something very authentically within me. That's the thing that we have to sell, because this entire industry is going to tell you time and time again that you are replaceable, that there are a million singers just like you. And it's not true, because no other singer is you. So the important thing is to distill exactly what is at the core of you and crystallize it so that you can put that undeniably into every aspect of your performance. And some people might find it alienating, but that's a good thing, because the people who love it are really going to love it.
Wise words. I love it. Good for you, Rinelle Krauss. Well, I can't let you go without asking my signature question. And that is, if there is one word or phrase that really describes who you are to the depth of your soul, what would that be?
So I think it's got to be a phrase. I think that I am relentlessly and joyfully curious.
Somehow I imagined the word relentless was going to be in there. I love that. And to be a singer, you got to be. That's fantastic, because curiosity is the spur to everything in this world, you know? And Ranelle, you keep that sense of wonder and that play in what you do because you do it with integrity. You know, this is
Thank
what's
you.
so really important. And bravo to you and all the best for all your fantastic performances to come and your life to come. We got to stay in touch. This is very interesting.
Absolutely.
But in the meantime, I want all of my listeners to seek Ranelle out at ranellekraus.com. And of course, you can look for me at Center Stage with PamelaKuhn.com for more shows like this. And more importantly, to really support the arts by doing so, because we must keep the arts alive in this world. It solves all the chaos. And if you really want a bit of fun, please find Ranelle Krauss on YouTube and watch her aerial work with the beauty of her arias, and you will really understand visually and orally what she is talking about in this session. So Ranelle, thanks again, and all the best for
Thank you
a
so
flute
much.
In London. All right, everyone, stay safe out there. This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.